We're continuing Parshat Vayeshev. So, Yehuda is demoted. Yehuda was the king, the leader of the tribes, and they all held him accountable. So they basically said, if you would have told us to do differently, we would have done differently. And even though Yehuda saved Yosef's life, but Yehuda could have done better. Vayered Yehuda me'etechav. So Yehuda went down from the brothers. The classical pshat is Rashi, he was demoted. There's another pshat. Yehuda ran away. Yehuda could not bear seeing his father so destroyed over what had happened to Yosef. And that's what Tosfos writes. Vayered Yehuda me'etechav, Yehuda left the family because Yehuda saw the product of what they had done. Yehuda saw his father destroyed. His father, who had stood up to all the challenges in life, including losing his favorite wife, Rachel, was now devastated and could not be comforted and would spend his days in weeping and in sack. And so Yehuda left. He couldn't stand seeing his father in such pain. Now, there's also the element of Yehuda knowing full well that they were behind it, that his father was crying over a son who was still alive. Yes.
You said they were sure of themselves what they did, and they didn't regret it. Did they not regret it?
No.
You said they didn't regret it.
We see they still held they were right. Okay. It will take 20 years till the brothers reach the point that they say, hey, we should have done different.
Only when they see yourself?
No. We'll see that in next week's parasha, when they go down to buy food in Mitzrayim, it's an excuse. The Torah describes it as Vayeredu Achei Yosef. Yosef's brothers went down. Throughout our parasha, they are described as his brothers. But they never feel that brotherliness towards him. He goes out searching at Achai Anochim Vakesh. I'm looking for my brothers. But in next week's parasha, they will suddenly be his brothers. And so Chazal say that when they go down in next week's parasha, each one had this thought, we're going down to Egypt, great. That's the excuse I was looking for. Maybe we'll be able to bring Yosef back. So in 20 years, they're going to have changed.
Did he go to Egypt when he ran away?
Again?
You said that Yehuda ran away because he couldn't bear to see his father suffer so much, but didn't.
Ran away wasn't like ran away where no one knew him. He went on. He separated from the family. He didn't live with the clan.
He didn't go down to Egypt.
He did not go down to Egypt, no. So Yehuda gets married. And he has a son. And he names that son Er. Er means awake. Er means awake. So there's a phenomenal pshat in the Tosfos. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor writes, Yehuda wrote, I'll read it to you. Until I saw it, I wouldn't believe it. Rav Yosef Chorsho writes, Al Shem Chavalea Nikru Vanea, based on her birth pangs, based on that her children were called. The first one was called Air Awake, Kilomar, as if to say, Lo Yashanti Alayla Al Chavaleh. Yehuda says, I didn't sleep all night. My poor wife was suffering. Elayiti Air. Vekarash Moer. That's what Rav Yosef Choshor. Vashani, and the second one was called Onan, which means to weep. Shaya Boche Veonen Al Chavaleh. He's saying, I was weeping seeing my wife suffer so. And then Sheila was to say, all the pain was hers. I couldn't take anything from her. So that's an interesting pshat from Rav Yosef Bechor Shor. Tov, we move on. So Yehuda's first son ensures that he does not impregnate his wife, and so he dies. The regular understanding in the Talmud is that by Onan it says that when he was intimate with Tamar, v'shichet arza, he would destroy his seed to the ground. So the pasuk describes a correlation between the two brothers, and Chazal understood that to mean that they both did the same thing. When they were intimate, they would ensure that their seed did not go into their wives. They would spill their seed on the ground. So they use that type of birth control. So here we learn the gravity of destroying one's seed on purpose. A person who would purposely destroy his seed. And revolving around this topic, we have a large discussion in Halacha. When we speak about birth control, so we have the question of birth control in general. We have a mitzvah to procreate, to have children. May a couple use birth control? And even if there are circumstances where they may, so there are ways in which it's considered that they did not destroy the seed during intimacy. And then there are ways where it's considered that they did destroy the seed during intimacy. For example, if the husband were to spill his seed outside his wife, that's called destroying a seed. That's what Aaron Onan did. There are other forms of birth control which are not necessarily destroying one seed. For example, a person is allowed to be intimate with his wife when she's pregnant, even though that seed won't produce any children. A person is allowed to be intimate with his wife when she's 70, even though that seed won't produce any children. So not every form of intimacy that won't produce a child is called spilling one seed. What is called spilling one seed and what isn't? So that's an area of discussion in Halakha. But the first place where we see an overt description of this being a transgression is here. Our tradition is that in the generation of the flood, they also did this. But that's not written overtly. That's our tradition. Here you see it clearly. An interesting point is that our whole story from the sale of Yosef till the descent to Mitzrayim will take 20 years. In 20 years, Yehuda will have 3 children, and then another 2 children, and then grandchildren. There will be quite a few generations going down into Egypt, which leads us to understand that these children were very young when they got married. 7, 8, 9, very young. And that brings on another question, which is, they died at the hands of heaven. And our assumption, it says in the Jerusalem Talmud, is that a person only gets a death penalty at the hands of heaven from age 20 and up. We know the human court, the court down below, takes a person to task from age 13, he's considered an adult. But in heaven, it's considered from age 20. So from here, the Tosfos, the Chizkuni, and others infer that 20 is different than 13. Age 13 is Halach al Moshe Misinai, as it says in the Mishnah and Tractate Nida. That's our tradition. You have to, before age 13, he's a minor. But age 20 is something that's judged in heaven. Well, age 20 is based on intellect, based on maturity and understanding. And so in heaven, they knew that these kids at age 8 were adults. They had the understanding of what we would call a 20-year-old. So that's the conclusion that the Tosfos conclude from this story, that they got the death penalty at the hands of heaven. Because the pasuk clearly says they were punished, which is not what we would expect for a minor. And we're not saying minors don't die, but our assumption is that any time a minor dies, it's not as a punishment. It's not a... Yeah?
Seems like this is the only story within the entire Tanakh that something like this happens. And not necessarily the death penalty that Shemayim gives these two, but... what these two in particular do. I mean, they're with their wife, and I mean, well, is there any noting on their motivation behind why they wouldn't, you know?
So Er didn't want to have children because he felt his wife would lose her beauty if she got pregnant.
Okay.
And that's what the Talmud says. And Onan didn't want to have children because he felt the children would all be attributed to his brother Er, because this was, he was just doing Yibum. there's a lot to think about in this. If I would have written the Medrash, I would have written it differently. I would have said they wanted her to themselves, not so much her beauty, but her care. But the Medrash doesn't say that. Medrash says it was all about her beauty. It's a little bit shocking how Yehuda's children turn out. Right. You know, that Yehuda is so pious and his two sons are so into beauty. The Torah even points out that when Yehuda goes with Tamar, she's all covered. He doesn't even see her. But that's parsha in its own right. And Tamar is the exact opposite. Tamar got into this because she wanted to be a part of the spiritual home of Yehuda. That's why Tamar pursued his children. Tamar was interested because she said, this is a home to be a part of.
The last class we were saying, on Monday, we were saying that Yehuda's kids were dying because he started to do a mitzvah and he didn't complete it. But do we find the same thing with Reuven? So Reuven also at some point tried to help.
But Reuven did what he could. Reuven
disappeared for a day.
Well, Reuven went to hide so that he could come back at night and pull Yosef out of the pit. Reuven wasn't on the scene when they saw Yosef. Reuven told them, throw him in the pit. He didn't know there were scorpions in the pit. He figured, this way I ensure he'll stay alive till tonight. And tonight I'll sneak back and I'll pull him out. That was Reuven's intention and that was what he did. Reuven did everything to save Yosef. Reuven suspected that if he does anything more overt, they would kill him too. That's what Rav Yosef Chorsho writes, that he felt that if he tries to counter them directly, he won't win. They were so upset at that point.
Didn't we say that if Reuven knew that this is how it would be recorded?
Right.
So it seems, it seems like he would have some ability.
Right. That's true. There definitely seems to be an undercurrent of blame at Reuven in that medrash that seems to indicate he could have done better. I'm not sure it's the same as Yehuda, where all the brothers say, had you spoken, we would have listened. So, Er and Onan, yes?
I forgot the question.
Okay, if you remember. Come back. So, Er and Onan pass away. And then Yehuda doesn't want to marry her off to the third son, Shelah. Now, in Halacha, we have a concept called Chazakah. Chazakah means after something's happened numerous times, you can assume it's going to continue happening. How many times does something have to happen for us to assume it'll happen again? So our general assumption is three times. Once an animal gored three times, we can assume this is a dangerous animal. Can't let that animal go around. So Chazakah is generally, after something happened three times, we assume that's it. That's, three strikes, you're out. But the truth is that in the Mishnah and in Talmud, there are two opinions. One opinion says after twice you have to be concerned, and the other opinion says after three times. And the way we rule in Halacha is that with anything that's a danger, there we suspect after twice there might be a danger. With anything that's not a danger, there we generally say three times is what creates a chazakah. Three times is enough of a series for you to assume it's going to continue this way. So this is relevant to you guys when you're dating. What was Yehuda thinking? She married two young kids, and they both died. This is a dangerous woman. I don't know what's going on with her, but being married to her causes you to die. That was Yehuda's assumption on the outside. According to one opinion, that's why Yehuda did not remain married to her. I went with the Pshat, Megamara, and Sota that he remained married to her. Because he said, you see, I had kids with her, nothing happened. But there's another opinion that says, no, the Pasuk says, lo yasaf. The word yasaf could mean to continue or to discontinue. So it says he did not yasaf, which either means he did not continue or he did not discontinue being with her. We have many words in Hebrew that are that way, just a second. So Yehuda initially thought, after twice that something happened, I don't want to risk the third kid. If a woman has two children that when they're circumcised, they bleed to death and you can't stop the bleeding, we don't circumcise the third. We don't say, hey, it's not yet a chazakah, it's only twice. We say, no, twice is enough. You're not doing the third one. The same thing if you're offered a date and you hear that two of her sisters have genetic problems or there's a disease that appeared twice in her family, don't be so quick to overlook it. In Halacha we say, once something appeared twice in a family, you check. You don't assume everything's okay. Now, some things every family has. Every family has a few weirdos. You know, there are certain things that if you're going to look at that, then there's no family that's kosher, right? There are certain things that every family has. But then there are things which not every family has. The halacha assumes that once something appeared twice in a family, we start being concerned. That's why when Tamar marries two of Yehuda's children, he's not waiting to see what's going to happen with the third.
It seems like he was. Wasn't she engaged to his third kid, but the third kid was too young?
So that was an excuse. He told her, hold off, Shayla's too young.
Why did they kill her over that? I'm saying because someone slept
right.
With her.
Right, he was in limbo.
And that
was the custom of the time. It's not Torah. The custom of the time was that a woman remains in the family. So Yehuda was hesitant. He didn't want Shayla to marry her. That's what the Pasuk says. He said, "Penyamut kamukechav." On the other hand, he was bound by the local custom, the custom of the time, that Shayla is supposed to marry her.
So she was engaged to him?
Engaged is not exactly the term.
That's what Rashi says. He says in the Nisuin, or Yerusin.
Show me the Rashi. Let's see the Rashi. The custom of the time was that family members marry a widow. And when a person dies without children, so ideally his brother, and if not, other family members marry her, as we find happened with Ruth as well. When Ruth's husband dies, Mahlon dies without children, so then her second cousin once removed, whatever, Boaz, right? It's Mahlon's father's, I guess it's second cousin, right? Elimelech and Boaz's father were siblings. So I guess Boaz was Mahlon's cousin, yeah? Her cousin does Yibum. No such concept technically in Halacha. That was the custom. Okay, we move on. So, yes.
I remember the question. Sure. So how it was Tamar when Judah had a relationship with her?
How old was Tamar? So there are two opinions. If we say she was Shem's daughter, then she couldn't have been a youngster because Shem had passed away a while ago. The flip side is the Talmud describes her conversation with Yehuda, where Yehuda asks her, how do you know your father didn't marry you off to someone? And she says, my father's long dead. And then he says, and maybe your mother and brother? And she says, no. So that sounds like she's very young. Meaning if her mother and brother are responsible for marrying her off, that sounds like she's very young. You see, they had a very intelligent conversation when Yehuda meets her. But that would make sense with what we discussed earlier. If Er and Onan were under 10 years old, each one was about 8, so then it makes sense that Tamar was also young. The Talmud says in the mitzvah of Yibam that the elders counseled the person. They say, your brother passed away without kids. Why don't you marry your brother's wife and build his family up for him? So the Talmud says, what does that mean, the elders counsel him? The Talmud says, it's not a blanket rule. We don't always tell a guy, marry your brother's wife, your brother's widow. Sometimes we say it's a bad idea. There's too much of an age gap. It's not a good idea. That's what the Talmud calls, notenim lo eitza ha-hogenet lo. We give him advice that's right for him. Sometimes it's not a good idea to marry her. In either direction, it could be he's a great guy and she's a lousy girl. It could be he's a lousy guy and she's a great girl. The Talmud gives stories where the guy was a gangster. He had a mitzvah of Yibum. And the woman came to court and said, help me, I don't want to be married to the guy. He's a terrorist. So the rabbis told him, you want to do Yibum, the way to do it is let her take off your shoe and spit in your shoe. And they did the whole process of chalitza and they sold him a load of goods. And they told him, this is the way you'll end up marrying him, which was in fact the way to set her free. And when they were done, they said, sorry, she's free to go. We did the process and It won't work now. So they helped her out. So it's not a blanket rule, go marry your brother's widow. Today we don't do it at all, and it's only a mitzvah when he died without kids. But coming back to our parsha,
Now I come to my question. Is it appropriate that because Yehuda was older and the Tamar is young, is it appropriate? Is it, or it was normal in that time?
It's up to her. It definitely was normal. We find often all the way through the Talmud and up until not so long ago that young girls would marry older people, and it goes the other way too, because Kalev married two wives who were 40 years older than him or more. So it went in both directions. It used to be considered a bad shiduch if the girl wasn't older than the guy. Rav Hirsch married a girl who was a few years older than him.
Why? What's the reason for that?
I'm not sure, but we find historically that women didn't live as long as men. The average man married two or three wives.
When was this?
Up until about 70 years ago. Because childbirth is a very dangerous thing. Mm. Pregnancy is dangerous, and childbirth is dangerous. With that in mind, so look, the Chafetz Chaim married multiple wives. The Chassam Sofer, multiple wives. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, multiple wives. Avraham Avinu, you see throughout history that people who lived long enough had more than one wife. Their wives did not live as long as them. Be it Avram, be it Yitzchak, whose wife dies first, he never remarries. Be it Yaakov, whose wives die much earlier than him. At the age of 35, his two wives die. He lives to the age of 170, right? It's probably because the women, once they got married, were in danger of dying. There was a higher probability they wouldn't live. Meaning, if you factor the complications of pregnancy, where something that we today, you know, we do C-sections today as a matter of course, but every C-section, 150, 200 years ago, the woman would probably die. Sometimes they'd slice up the baby and take him out, but they didn't have this. A woman didn't live after a C-section 200 years ago. And then you have the bleeding postpartum, and then you have the problem of pieces of the placenta that stay inside that'll kill a woman if they can't get the whole placenta out. Today we have a process where we take it out. And then you have the postpartum bleeding, and then you have the infections that can plague a woman as her whole womb is, or the bottom of the womb is wounded after giving birth. So today we have simple treatment for all that. But any one of these little things, which are common course today, you know, today a woman gives birth, they don't even ask her, they give her a shot right after birth to make her stomach contract, and the placenta comes sliding right out. Today it's like a given. A woman gives birth, and 3 minutes later, the placenta comes out. Didn't used to be that way. When I was born, it was not that way. I'm saying not that long ago. Yeah, he's laughing. That's like, were there still dinosaurs then? No. When I was born, it wasn't that way, because the custom used to be that when a woman gives birth, you don't say mazel tov till the placenta comes out. Because mazel tov is like, great, there's a baby. No, you don't say mazel tov. Who said she's going to live? Until you see the full placenta come out, don't say mazel tov. That was the custom. Today, no one even knows the custom, because before you even realize what happened, the placenta's out. I'm saying there are a million things that have changed in the last century, but it was probably because women were at a huge risk of dying at childbirth.
How does that make it more desirable to have an older wife?
You might as well get someone more mature, more knowledgeable, more experienced, stronger. Chances are she's not going to live past 35 anyways. How many women live past 35? You see, even Leah didn't live past 35, according to the Medrash. And she didn't die at childbirth. I'm saying it wasn't easy. Coming back to our parsha, So it was common that people didn't look at the age gaps. I mean, even today, you can still see older couples where there were huge age gaps and no one paid attention to it. The question was how mature you were and if it matched. You also have to factor that there were tremendous other factors. One of the major questions was, can you get a decent guy? You know, my great-grandmother married someone who was maybe 6-7 years younger than her. He wasn't even going to start dating my great-grandfather. He was like 16. And she was in her 20s, and her parents went looking for a shidduch. And as they were traveling to a prospective shidduch, they stopped in my great-grandfather's town, and someone said to them, "What are you looking for a shidduch? We have the most amazing young man here." And they convinced them not to go for the other shidduch, but to marry him. They go over to him, and he says, "I'm not even dating yet." They said, "So what? It's a really good girl." And that was the end of it. He got married, and they built a family, and the rest is history. And she was 5 or 6 years older than him, and he wasn't even interested in getting married yet. But someone was good or was right at convincing both sides that this made so much sense that no one should care. Not that she was older and not that he wasn't interested in dating. They got married. So yes, Tamar is much younger than Yehuda, but we see in Tanakh, she duch him in both directions. You know, Shlomo's mother, Bathsheba, how old was she? 12. How old was David HaMelech? Let's see, David HaMelech was 58. Okay, that's a huge age gap. Right? And, well, she was 12 when they first got married. So let's say by the time she had Shlomo, she was 18. I don't know how old she was. I didn't do the math. I'm saying at the end, David was 58 when she had Shlomo. I don't know if she was 14, then 15, then I have to sit down and do the math. But I'm saying that's a big age gap. And yet, it still made sense. Achitofel, Bathsheba's grandfather dies at the age of 32. He's a grandfather already. He sees Bathsheba, his granddaughter, married to David. I'm saying things were different.
But Achitofel, didn't he kill himself?
He did.
I'm mixing it up with someone else.
No, he did. He committed suicide. Yeah.
It wasn't like he died because he was young.
I didn't say he died because he was young. I said he was that young and had a granddaughter. People lived life differently then. Okay. Especially if you think that people could die of gum disease at age 20. They didn't have antibiotics. I'm saying so. It's you viewed life differently. Back to our parsha. So, Yosef goes down to Egypt, and we have a phenomenal medrash on Yosef in Egypt. It says Hashem was with Yosef in Egypt. Yosef's in Egypt. Hashem was with Yosef in Egypt. Says the medrash, there was once a man taking his camels. He had 12 camels, and they were all carrying pitchers of wine on their back. And then one of the camels went off the road and into a store, a pagan store. So the camel driver ran after the camel to bring it back. So the pagan asked him, "Why'd you leave 11 camels loose on the street and run into my store to grab the one camel?" So he said, "The 11 camels no one has to watch over. There's no pagan there who might touch the wine and make it all non-kosher. But my one camel that went into your store, I have to watch over it, because if you touch the wine, if you pour the wine or touch the wine, I lost all the wine. So that's why I ran after this camel." So says the Medrash, Hashem was with Yosef. That means Hashem was with Yosef to the exclusion of the other siblings. That, so to speak, Hashem's focus was on Yosef, because poor Yosef was sent among the pagans, was sent to the worst place on the planet, to Egypt. And so Hashem says, "I'm with him." Just like the camel that went astray, let's make sure everything goes right with him. So Hashem said, "Let me make sure everything's okay with Yosef." So there was this extra hashgacha for Yosef. And we have the Medrash that Potiphar bought him for his own pleasures. And then the angel Gavriel came and castrated Potiphar. We discussed last week the Medrash that in Potiphar's home is already the girl Osnat, a girl from Yaakov's house, right? You remember the Medrash last week? The daughter of Shechem is growing up there. She must have been a baby at this point. Yosef is all 17.
The daughter of Shechem and Dinah?
Correct, the daughter of Shechem and Dinah. So Osnat, the daughter of Shechem and Dinah, is there, the adopted daughter of Potiphar and his wife. And she must be a year old, right? Under a year old. She's a baby. She was just born. And Yosef lands in that house. So there's baby Osnat there, and Yosef in the house. Yosef is 17 years older, if you want another shidduch with a large age gap. And we don't usually recommend that today. Today we would say that 10 years is a big gap. From 10 years and up, there's really room to consider whether a shidduch makes sense. I'm not saying it never makes sense. You know, if one of them is 50 and the other one's 60, it might make sense. If one's 50 and 40, it might make sense. I'm saying, but if one's 30 and the other one's 20, there's room to wonder. Chazal were concerned that they would have different amounts of energy. If she's 20 and she wants to go on the merry-go-round and go on the Ferris wheel and on the carnival, and he's like, it's okay. So she's got all this energy, and he's an old man. It's like, I know 30 sounds old to you, but in certain ways it is. I'm saying it's not 20. You don't have the energies of 20 at 30. So coming back to Yosef. So he's there. And Yosef has a few challenges. His first challenge is what Potiphar bought him for. Potiphar bought him for his own pleasures. We're talking about intimate pleasures. Okay, so Hashem took care of that. Potiphar can't function anymore. The Medrash doesn't explain exactly what happened. The Medrash words it as the angel came and tore him to pieces so that he couldn't do anything. Does that mean literally, or does that mean in Paro's house, suddenly Paro decided to upgrade Potiphar to be in his most inner chambers, and one of the prices of that was that they'd make you into a eunuch, you know. We don't know exactly. And the doctor was maybe performing a procedure just to cure a hernia, and he, by mistake, his knife slipped, and that's it, and everything's gone. The Medrash, the Gemara goes really far, that he like tore him totally apart. It was incurable. But the Gemara doesn't say what happened. The Gemara says Gabriel, the angel, came and ensured this would happen so that Yosef would be safe. And again, we don't know how that played itself out, Gabriel, the angel, coming. We don't imagine that it means that Gabriel showed up with a knife and while he was sleeping, you know, he woke up the next morning and that's what happened. But whatever. However, it played itself out. Yosef's in the house. And Potiphar's wife is big into looking at the stars. And she looks at the stars and she sees that great things are supposed to come from her and Yosef. Great things in a positive way. And she's a pious woman. So now she's stuck. What's she supposed to do? And this is where she is a pious woman. Yeah, that's what I said. We will pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, next class.